This is Radio Free Brooklyn, and you're listening to the Brooklyn Player Show. I'm Veronica Newton, and today my guest is accordionist Will Holzhauser.
Okay.
My name is Will Holzhauser. I'm an accordionist and composer, and I live here in Brooklyn, New York.
That first track was A Recurring Dream from the album Introducing Musette Explosion. The second track was Boat Float, which is a klezmer-inspired piece from Arnold Hammerschlag's No Face, No Name album.
Yeah, I started out playing piano when I was a kid. I took piano lessons just because my parents thought it was a good idea. And then when I got a little older, I got a little more interested in it. I started taking jazz lessons in high school. I started playing in bands. I played in a reggae band in high school.
Were you playing keyboard?
Playing keyboards, yeah. So I just, you know, I was interested in a lot of different kinds of music. My parents listened to a lot of folk music at home. I went through a punk rock phase. So, you know, like a lot of people, there was a sort of natural eclecticism in what I grew up listening to. And then when I was in college, my friend Sam Bardfeld, who also plays in Arnold Hammerschlag's band, bought me an old accordion at a rummage sale. We got back to school one fall and he said, "Here, I got you a present." And it was this really musty old, very, very old, decrepit accordion, but
pawn shop or
something. It was from a rummage sale. Yeah. And there are a lot of these accordions floating around, actually. You know, lots of people say to me, "Hey, you know, my uncle played the accordion and I've got an old accordion in my closet, you know, if you want to check it out." So there are actually a lot of decrepit old accordions floating around, because accordions don't generally get better with age. They're like machines. They're all these little moving parts. So they kind of deteriorate. People put them in the closet. They forget about them. So anyway, Sam got me one of these old accordions, but it was very charming. It was very beautiful. I didn't know anything about accordions. There was no accordion music in my family or in my community when I was growing up. You know, the only music I think I'd heard that even involved the accordion was the Pogues.
Oh, yeah.
I love the Pogues. I still love the Pogues. And that's what I thought of when I saw this accordion. In addition to just being charmed by its overall charm as an antique object and as a musical, just a musical curiosity. And, you know, studying jazz piano, it was a very serious, you know, business. And the accordion right away was a different department. It was fun. There was some aspect of street music or the circus about it, and it had a connection to the world of folk music, you know, which is what I grew up hearing with my parents. You know, my parents' records, they were really into different kinds of folk music. So, and that had always felt like a different category than jazz to me. And one thing I liked about the accordion is it sort of, for me anyway, it kind of unified these different musical interests. Oh yeah, this could be used to play jazz, it could be used to play folk music. It made me start thinking of jazz as a kind of folk music in a way. So discovering the accordion, or maybe I should say being discovered by the accordion, sort of led me into this new door and these different musical associations. So I started playing in a band with some friends in college, and, you know, it was mostly a rock band, but we did a bunch of different kinds of folk music too, and started learning things by ear off records. And that also was different than, you know, the taking jazz classes in college. It was one thing that was very different about studying jazz in a school was learning music by ear off records, because there was no accordion teacher where I went to school. I didn't know anything about finding accordion books or the kind of classic study of the instrument. So I started learning music off records by ear, and just getting any kind of record that I enjoyed that had an accordion on it. So I did a bunch of transcriptions of Cajun and Zydeco music, especially some klezmer music, some Eastern European music. So I started to learn about the different sounds the accordion could make. And for me, that was another aspect of learning about the instrument and the world of music associated with it, was learning things by ear. Anyway, that's how I got started in the accordion. And then after college, I moved to New York. I started taking lessons with William Schimmel, who's a fantastic teacher, great accordionist, great musician. And, you know, I still study with him. He's been a very important mentor for me for something like 20 years now. So anyway.
So it sounds like you were playing and then diving in and just experimenting and imitating.
Yeah. Yeah, just trying to learn.
Exploring, imitating.
Yeah, because at the same time, it was really great to check out the all the associations that came with the accordion, and it's part of all these traditions around the world. But at the same time, I didn't grow up in any of those traditions. So in addition to all of that history, there was also an aspect of the accordion, again, for me, that was like a blank slate. So, you know, I didn't know very much about the history of jazz and the accordion. So I said, oh, yeah, this is a nice sound, and you could use it to play some jazz or some, you know, some aspects of like jazz harmony sounds nice on the accordion.
Yeah, it has that, the really organ type sound and the all the different harmonies you can do with it.
Right. Yeah. It is very much like a portable organ. You know, it's in, there is a tradition of jazz accordion, which is, you know, there was a great accordionist, Art Van Dam, that was very popular, especially in the 50s. And it's this kind of jazz accordion it's very defined along certain lines. They use a single reed sound. No one is going to know what that means, but it's a certain setting on the accordion.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's very mellow. And you can play beautiful chords. You can play rich chords. It doesn't have a lot of overtones. But that kind of jazz accordion, in the Art Van Dam specifically, was very inspired by Benny Goodman. He wanted to be like the Benny Goodman of the accordion. And he was very popular, very successful. He did great. But that's just one slice of the accordion. And one thing I like about playing jazz and improvised music on the accordion is connecting it, like trying to learn from all these different sounds that people around the world make, you know, whether it's in tango music or zydeco and blues music in Louisiana, or the African, they use the accordion in Madagascar, in Europe, you know, all the kinds of European folk music. And so there are all these sounds that the instrument can make that, you know, I wanted to explore outside of just the sort of most classic jazz accordion sound.
Gives you a whole palette to play with, all these different
shadings
and colors and vibes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and different rhythms too. Like the accordion can be a great rhythmic instrument, but a lot of people don't think of it that way, because at least in our country, people associate it with the polka or with some, you know, really syrupy kind of society music or something. So it's not, it often isn't thought of as a rhythmic instrument, but that's how they use it in South America, in Africa, and in a lot of, you know, even some of our own, the American folk traditions too. It's very rhythmic.
Beautiful. Wow. I love that Sam gave you that. I didn't know that. He was the one who gave you that.
Yeah.
First musty old thing you had to dust off and start playing with.
Yeah, well, you never know what friends are going to do for you, you know? And they don't know what's going to, I don't know. Friends are always they always surprise you with stuff.
Well, it sounds like it really sparked you, and it really got you thinking and exploring and checking out this huge variety of music.
Definitely.
Excellent. So tell me about your trio, which is Ron Horton on trumpet, Dave Phillip on bass, and then sometimes you're joined on piano.
Oh, yeah. That group, Ron Horton on trumpet and Dave Phillips on bass. And that's a group I've had for a long time. goes back to about 2001. And we haven't been playing as much the last couple of years because I've been focusing on a different group. But this group, I'm very proud of. We made three CDs together for the Clean Feed label in Portugal. And this group plays mostly my own compositions, you know, which at the beginning of the group, it grew out of some solo accordion pieces that I wrote. And then I wanted to add a couple of voices to that. And Ron and Dave both brought so much to this music in terms of their voices as improvisers and their sounds and their instrument. You know, both Ron's really melodic improvising and great, all the great textures and sounds that he can get out of his horn. And Dave is a master of the arco. You know, he's a great classical bassist as well as improviser. So he's, you know, anyway, I've really had a great time with that group. And we did our second album was recorded in Portugal in a city called Faro. And it was a live concert. That was a lot of fun. There was a fire station in the basement of the theater. So we just had one chance to make this album. They said, all right, we're going to record, but just so you know, there's fire station in the theater. So if you hear sirens during the show, just don't worry about it.
You're kidding me.
So fortunately, there were no fires that night. But so that was our second album, which was called Singing to a Bee. And then for our third album, we had a guest, Bernardo Sassetti, who was a fantastic Portuguese pianist, just a genius of the piano. I love the way he played. And sadly, he died a couple of years ago at a very young age. And everybody that knew him was really heartbroken because he was such a great musician and such a sweet person. And unfortunately, we never got to do any live. Well, we did one live concert with him at the beginning of that project, but we didn't get to tour or do more
with him.
Yeah, because he was so great. And he has a lot of, he made several really beautiful records for Clean Feed. But anyway, that trio has been a lot of fun. But the last couple of years, I've been focusing on another trio, which is called Musette Explosion, which is a band with Matt Ministeri on guitar and Marcus Rojas on tuba. And that is kind of grew out of a collaboration with Matt. Matt and I started playing French Musette waltzes for fun back in the late 90s. And then after a while, we said, we'll play some gigs. It would be fun to have a band that did this. And Matt had another band. We did some of these tunes in Matt's band. After a few years, we said, oh, it'd be fun to play with Marcus. He's so great. So
he's your bass.
Yeah, right? He's the bass instrument in that band. But the great thing about Marcus is he can not only cover the bass role, but he can also take solos as if he were a French horn or something. And he can make all kinds of sounds and textures on his horn, rhythmic things, different bird calls and, you know, whale sounds. So it's sort of this band is kind of a double collaboration. You know, the first I was working on these tunes with Matt, and then Marcus came to the picture, and it's a really special.
He brings a lot to it.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. I mean, as does Matt, of course. Matt is an incredible virtuoso on the guitar. He also plays this crazy six-string banjo. So Matt has a whole wealth of sounds and references that he, you know, in his own playing, which is based in, I can't even say what it's based in, but he's studied very deeply early jazz, vintage jazz guitar, like Eddie Lang and that department, Django Reinhardt. So he does that stuff great, but then he's got all these other things that he's into that he can pull out. So it's a really special group, three people that are very, very different. And we made a record, put it out ourselves about a year ago. And
it's really fun and delightful. I haven't seen you guys play live yet, but I would love to, because it really is just fun music. It's so great.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we love it. We love that material. I mean, a lot of those, the French Musette waltzes, Musette was a popular style in Paris, you know, starting about 100 years ago. And if you, you know, when we hear it as Americans, we think, oh, yeah, that sounds French. But yes. Then if you look below the surface, it's actually, you know, there are all these different influences that went into making the Musette style. It's actually this really multicultural product of Paris, you know.
Like one some of the, Moroccan influence. And
you know, that, I think, came to Paris later. But this is from a time when there were, like, Italians coming to Paris, a big wave of Italian immigration. There were the Italians brought the accordion to Paris. And in the early days, when they first got there in the late 1800s, there were actually signs up that said it was controversial because the dance
down
halls.
Down with the accordion.
Yeah, well, it was the new invader. It was like the you know, nasty immigrant, like threatening
new technology taking over.
Right, yeah, because the Parisian dance halls at that time were dominated by an instrument called the Musette, which was a little bagpipe made from a goat's bladder. And right. So this was like a kind of
souped up giant version.
Right, yeah.
On the accordion, steroids.
Right. It was like, oh no, it's more than just a goat's bladder. It was modern and could play in all keys and was a lot louder. So at first they put up these signs, no accordions allowed in, you know, in Paris. It's like,
oh my gosh.
And but soon they made a kind of peace, and the Musette dances continued, but they stopped gradually using those the Musette bagpipes, and the accordion became the thing. And then of course the Roma people, the, you know, had been in France for a long time, and that's Django Reinhardt was a Roma, and they have a whole special tradition of music that dovetailed into the Musette style. And some people say, oh yeah, the gypsies, the Roma, they brought in the beautiful minor key waltzes, and they're the ones that brought that vibe into it. And then of course there were people from other parts of Europe. There's Spanish pasodobles were very popular, German and Polish music, and American jazz came in during World War One. So it's this whole mixture of things. Anyway, we like Musette music, and it's been fun to play it. And kind of in this group, we try to put our own spin on it. We improvise a lot.
So are you taking the old waltzes and some of the traditional things that you found? Because it's original with an influence, or are there some tracks that are actually, hey, we found this melody and it's our take on it?
Yeah, about 3/4 of the tunes are older French tunes that we learned, because the melodies are beautiful. So we do our own versions of a lot of these old Musette waltzes, because they're great tunes. Some of them are really chromatic, especially when the accordionist and guitarist got interested in American jazz. They said, oh, I'm going to write some swing influenced. They even called them swing waltzes. And it's really
beautiful.
It's really interesting. Fun. Hybrid style. So anyway, but rather than recreate it and make it a museum piece, we like to play the tunes and improvise on them and give them our own spin. And then I wrote some original music for
probably what makes it so lively and vibrant, because it's really juicy, fun.
Oh, thanks.
Stuff to listen to.
Oh, it's a fun band. We have a great time. And yeah, we just did a tour on the West Coast. We played at Monterey Jazz Festival and at a Django Fest in near Seattle. We played at an accordion festival in Texas. But it's an interesting band too, because it sort of sits in this place between jazz, chamber music, and folk music, so we can play a lot of different places.
Ladies and gentlemen, Musette Exposure!
Thank you. Regina is such a wonderful musician and such a wonderful person to work for, and it's really been one of my favorite musical experiences playing with her. She picks great material. She commissions arrangements from different people. She puts everything together in a very acoustic way. It's all built around the acoustic sound of her violin. So it's a great environment to play accordion in, because the dynamics are very, very natural. It's not a super loud band. So it's fun in that respect.
You're not being drowned out.
Right.
All these electric instruments.
Yeah. And she also just has a great, she's a real virtuoso violinist, but she also has a real knack for connecting with the audience and for dialing into an emotional vibe that people can enjoy.
That's a great way of putting it. Because, yeah, she puts on a really fun show. Wonderful, wonderful show.
Yeah, she does. You know, which is to say, you know, she never plays down to the audience, but she kind of opens up to the audience in a way that brings people in. It's been really fun to be on stage while that's happening and learn from it. So Reverse Thread was her project that she did. It was based in African music of the African, sort of tracing African diaspora music back to Africa and doing, you know, it was sort of like jazz versions of African music. So it was really interesting. And she had a great kora player in that band, Yakuba Sissoko, who's a fantastic musician, plays this 21-string kora. And he's a very unusual musician because he's lived in New York. He's from Mali, but he's lived in New York for a long time. He plays in all different kinds of settings. He's, you know, done stuff with everybody from Paul Simon to, you know, everyone else. And he can tune his kora to all the different Western keys, and he can just fit into almost any musical setting. So anyway, Reverse
That's
Thread.
Incredible. Because, yeah, really I find that there's something so relaxing and magical and peaceful about kora music.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend who, when his infant would cry, he would put on kora.
Mm-hmm.
And she would calm right down.
Yeah.
And I feel like it affects me that way, too.
Yeah, it's just true. Yeah, there's something about it. As soon as you hear that sound, it does have sort of a calming effect, you know, which is not to put it into just one box, because it's also like, you know, rhythmically incredible. All these polyrhythms going on, all this complex stuff, but it all dials into this, you know, this calming, this kind of internal space that's always beautiful.
Thank you.
So that was the first project of Regina's that I was in. The second project, the more recent one, is called Southern Comfort, which is based in Southern blues and folk music from the time of her grandfather, who was from Alabama. So again, she commissioned different arrangements by different people. I did one arrangement on the record of a tune from Louisiana. And yeah, that band's been a lot of fun too. And that band has Marvin Sewell on guitar, Chris Lightcap on bass, and Alvester Garnett on drums.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
an experience touring or playing on stage, is there any memorable particular one that you recall?
There are a couple of funny things that happened. One of my favorites was we played with Regina in a concert series in northern Italy in the province of Trentino. And it's this music festival they have every summer where the concerts take place outdoors and the audience hikes into the concert. So they all have to get up the mountain and, you know, and we had to get up hike the mountain too. We didn't quite have to hike, but we took a gondola up the side of a mountain and then they put us in some trucks and drove us. But it was really rustic.
That's amazing.
It was really incredible.
Like a gondola, beautiful. Like the ski or mountain touring gondola kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, not a boat, but one of those
cable car thing.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So that was great.
That's adventurous.
That was really fun. Yeah. And
was it like an amphitheater? What was the setting once you were playing? It was a venue or a regular venue?
No, there was no venue at all. It was just a meadow.
Oh.
And they brought in a little PA system on a truck and set it up on one side of the meadow, and the audience sat on the other side of the meadow. And
I would love this.
It was really great. It was really wonderful. And I think it started out where all the concerts were, you know, acoustic, like classical concerts.
Right. No amplification. Happening.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, for a group like that, they had to bring in a little amplification, which kind of ruins the story. But anyway, it was a lot of fun.
Not really, because I'm just imagining the setting must have been really special.
It was amazing. And when you get to play outdoors in nature, something always special about that.
And with that particular band, too, that must have been a really nice fit.
Yeah, that was great. So I'm trying to think of other things. There's one other concert with Regina's band where, you know, like I said, one of the things I like about the band is that it's very quiet. At one point we were playing, I think it was in Macon, Georgia, and there was an intermission in the concert. So in the intermission, the audience went out into the lobby. It's in this old theater, and they had a popcorn machine in the lobby. So for the second half of the concert, they all came back in. They all had popcorn. And we all hear them munching on the popcorn. The band is so quiet that
you could actually hear the audience munching popcorn.
Yeah, eating the popcorn is very distracting.
That is quiet, because usually you wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
To even hear anything with most concerts, so. That's
right.
Hilarious.
What else happened? The
movie cinematic popcorn.
Yeah, exactly. Just like we were a movie.
Right.
That was a lot of fun. Once I was playing a concert, and I played for a while in a trio with the Dutch drummer Han Benink and Michael Moore, American saxophonist, clarinetist who lives in Holland. And we were playing a concert somewhere, and we left the stage at the end of the concert, and they were still applauding, so Michael and I went back out for the encore, but Han had gotten lost somewhere I think he had to go to the bathroom.
Oh no.
So we didn't know what to do. So we just started playing something. And then in the middle of the tune, he came out on the balcony somewhere and he said, "I got lost," and started. Han likes to play on any object anywhere. So he just started playing something.
Just where he ended up. Yeah. I love that.
It was great.
Up on the balcony.
Yeah.
He's got his sticks.
Yeah.
That's great.
So yeah, there's been a lot of
one of those
wacky episodes.
What do we do?
Yeah,
awkward moment.
Right,
wow, go for it.
Yeah,
but he saved it.
He did. Yeah. So I don't know. There have been so many, you know, fun experiences, and not just because of wacky happenings, but you know, good music too.
Yeah. Incredible. Well, really, that's just a beautiful opportunity to work and collaborate with Regina Carter.
Mm.
And it's fantastic that she commissions some arrangements from you and things like that, too. That's yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. Just a couple, but it was lots of fun to work on those.
Nice. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's been really such a pleasure to work with her. I'll be on a tour with Regina Carter in late February, early March, mostly on the West Coast, but also we're playing in Little Rock, Arkansas, where I was born, but never been back, so that should be interesting. We're going to play in Lafayette, Louisiana, a great accordion town, and some dates on the East Coast, too. So that'll be fun.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Will, for taking the time to speak to me. The songs you heard were Reed Song by the Will Holzhauser Trio. Then came Chanson Pop from Musette Explosion and Zarapiki from Regina Carter's Reverse Thread. Then we heard Miner's Child, another Regina Carter track, from the Southern Comfort album. Will be playing with his project Musette Explosion at Birdland on Thursday, January 28, this Thursday, at 6 p.m. Check it out. It should be very fun. Here's another track from Reverse Thread.